they're starting to open up the country little by little, and there's been a lot of talk about elective surgeries. And I think that that's really kind of a misnomer on some things, because I think people think of that as just, well, this is just optional. And there, that the term is really almost misleading in that sense, because there are a lot of surgeries that people are putting off because they don't want to go into hospital situations, or hospitals were told they couldn't do such and such. And your health is at risk on some of these things. I got a friend of mine whose wife needed and now has had a hysterectomy because there's some serious issues going on. Knee replacements, hip, all types of joint replacements. My wife's amputation was an elective surgery. This is something that she had to make the choice to do because they tried to save her legs for so long. And then finally she said, you know what? This has got to go. This is killing me. And so let's clear up what elective surgery is. And then by doing so, I invited a special guest on the show. This is Dr. Chris Jones. He is the chief of staff at TriStar Centennial Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. We have spent some time at TriStar Centennial Medical Center as my wife. We lived in Nashville for many, many years. We're in Montana now. But I asked him to come on the show to talk about some of these things so we have a little bit more of education as caregivers, because that's part of our journey here is this on this show. We want to educate, want to empower, and hopefully we're going to entertain. And speaking of entertaining, we hope that John will be joining us soon, but they have some significant power outage in Nashville, and he is not able to join us right at this point. But hopefully by the end of this half hour, he'll be able to be here with us. All right, so Dr. Jones, Vanderbilt School of Medicine, where he did that, Johns Hopkins, and now you're the chief of staff there. You're a cardiologist. Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for taking some time to come here and talk about this, because I know that people are the information is coming so fast and furious to people. It's almost like a wall of noise. And it's good to sit down with the experts and just say, okay, what's going on here? So what I'd like for you to do is I would like for you to just jump right into, what is elective surgery?
Well, that's a great, well, first off, Peter, before I go any, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank you for having me on the show and getting this message out. It's really a critical message. I also want to thank all the people that are on the front line. You know, I'm chief of staff and I'm a cardiologist. So my services in terms of clinical care for direct patient care in COVID-19 in Nashville, thankfully we didn't get hit so hard that my services were needed so much, but we've got a lot of first line nurses and doctors that have really stepped up and put themselves in harm's way to take care of patients. So I'm so thankful for all of them. Elective surgeries is something that we tackled very early on back in March, and we assembled our surgeons and other proceduralists together to help us decide what elective surgeries is. You know, you gave some great examples, hysterectomy, an amputation, joint replacement, that on the surface of it, you might say, well, you know, that's an elective surgery, but it's not optional. And I think the way you framed it is right on. And so when we got our surgeons and procedurals together, we had about 30 of us in a room along with our administrative team. And we defined for our hospital back in March as an elective surgery was a surgery that could be delayed for 6 to 8 weeks without harming the patient. So, you know, there are some 60-year-old men who need a knee replacement that can wait 6 to 8 weeks, and it's really not going to be a big deal for them. There are some 60-year-old men who need a knee replacement, and they're currently in a wheelchair and can't walk, and they're at risk of becoming bedbound and having muscle atrophy, and then having a really, really difficult time ever getting back on their feet if they don't have that knee replacement. So just, you know, any particular surgery, it's not just the surgery that makes it elective or not. It's the whole patient. One of the things I really like about the way you share your experience with your wife, Gracie, is that it's not just her medical conditions or the doctors you face, it's the entirety of the person. And so what makes an elective surgery really depends not just on the surgery, but how the patient's doing. The other example of a hysterectomy is a great one. You know, sometimes people have some minimal symptoms from a uterus that needs to come out. Sometimes they can have life-threatening bleeding. Amputations, another great example. So sometimes that can be because of significant discomfort, but sometimes an amputation needs to occur because somebody's life is at risk. So all of these surgeries can either be elective or urgent or emergent, really depending on the whole patient, not just the surgery itself.
Well, and you got like kids getting tubes in their ears, and there's so many different things that are going on. You can't just indefinitely postpone it, even if it's 6 to 8 weeks. Well, guess what? We're 6 to 8 weeks into this thing now, aren't we?
Well, that's the other consideration here is that you're exactly right. We're that far into it. And so we've had some people that, although back at early March, their surgery might have been elective at that point, but now it's becoming, you know, semi-urgent or urgent and really needing to happen. You know, we've been really fortunate here in Nashville. The citizenry banded together, and we abided by the social mitigation strategies and stayed away from one another. And we flattened the curve. We've all been hearing that expression, flattening the curve, so that the health system doesn't get overwhelmed with COVID patients. We didn't have that in Nashville. We were very lucky. And so we're now in a position where the hospital volumes are down, actually, and we have plenty of capacity in the community to begin doing elective surgery safely. And so we actually started them back up this past Thursday, just 4 days ago now.
Let me jump in. I got a couple of things that I want to address, but I want to ask you real quickly. When this thing all went down, you're the chief of staff, so you're having this meeting. What was that like for you? I mean, was it kind of surreal that, okay, we're in a pandemic here. I'm the chief of staff at this major urban hospital here. Was that kind of surreal?
Well, I see myself, yes. The short answer is yes. I will say I see myself as a servant leader. You know, my job is I have such an incredibly talented and intelligent medical staff, nursing staff, administrative team. My job is to give them opportunities to succeed. And so by getting everybody in the room, that really was my job, getting everybody in there, letting voices be heard in a constructive fashion, helping guide that conversation and then make a decision. And, you know, back in early March, seeing what happened in Italy and the model forecast for Tennessee looked pretty grim. It looked like we were going to need a 1,500-bed ad hoc emergency hospital in our Music City Center. Our governor drew up plans for that. We were fortunate we got to help with some of the local decision-making, our Centennial did. But we were concerned that we might be overwhelmed with COVID patients. We were concerned that we might run out of PPE. We were concerned that we might run out of ventilators. It was a really, it was a daunting time. I was reminded, and I've said this a couple times, that Roosevelt said that courage is not the absence of fear, but it's realizing that something else is more important than that fear. And I think we kept that in our mind as we made our plans. And in that meeting that day, although I saw a lot of people who don't want to stop operating on their patients that are suffering, we also knew that we needed to make sure that we were good stewards in our community and made sure that the community was protected and that we could care for all the patients that might need to be cared for.
We had a situation out in my area out here. It was really sad. This guy had chest pains and he wouldn't go to the hospital because he was afraid of catching this thing and he died. Heart attack. He died. And well, that's one of those tragic things. You're like, oh, come on. You know, and so talk a little bit about that fear of going to the hospital.
Yeah, I think that's really maybe the key point at the current time in our nation, particularly in areas like Montana and Tennessee. The fear of going to the hospital at this point is going to be is going to cause more damage than the virus is. One of the greatest things that's about my job is like you, I get to talk to a lot of people and I get to hear a lot of stories. I think I'm up to 8 stories now of from different doctors where they've had patients that they've told me about that have put off care. And because of that, there have been some deaths. There have been some people that are going to have long-term serious health problems because of delays in care. They're really terribly sad. I will share, we had a great story last week. It was a 33-year-old gentleman, and his story, he shared it with the local news. We asked him to, and he graciously agreed to. But he, 33, his wife is 8 months pregnant, and he had been having crushing chest pain. And he was afraid to come to the hospital, and his pregnant wife finally talked him into it. And he came in, and he had a really a life-threatening coronary blockage that was quickly stented, and thankfully he's not going to suffer any ill effects from it. but he almost made a decision that could have really impacted him, his future child, and his wife. We were so thankful that he chose to come in. But the story that you just shared is all too common. You know, we've heard some terrible statistics in New York City. The incidence of sudden cardiac death is up 800%. 800%. You know, that they just were totally overwhelmed, and so people weren't able to make it in. Lombardi.
Do you think they weren't able to make it in, or do you think they were just afraid to go in, or is it a combination of both, or what do we know?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think now New York was in a different, you know, situation than Montana or Nashville or most of the nation. Many parts of their health system were overwhelmed, but people there were afraid to go to the hospital. Their healthcare system was also very overwhelmed. It may have been that ambulances couldn't get to them in time.
Because I saw that Mercy ship came in. I mean, the USS Comfort or something, and they were underutilized. And I think that fear, and I've told people, I said, please turn off cable news because, you know, the fear is going to, like you said, it's going to hurt a lot of people. And so, you know, and yeah, your situation in Tennessee and out here in Montana, was certainly much different than in New York and New Jersey and in New Orleans and some other places. But one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today is so you can help bring that calmness and assurance. Okay, look, yeah, this is scary, but we know what to do, and here's what we are doing, and here's what you can do as a caregiver, as a patient, that kind of thing. So thank you for that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the opportunity is a great one for us and for the nation. You know, the thing about fear is that it's paralyzing. And I had a chance to listen to one of your podcasts where you quoted C.S. Lewis, and I thought it was just a great quote, and it was the one where he talked about living in the atomic age, and you turned it on its head and said, you know, what's it like to live in the COVID-19 age? And what he said in the quote was that we should act sensibly. And I think and it's such a powerful comment, right? I mean, you know, fear becomes paralyzing. And so what we need to do is to recognize, sure, this is a bad time for us. And for me, it's probably the biggest challenge we faced in my lifetime. But when you talk to, you know, like my grandparents who lived through World War II or others who've lived through, you know, things that are also really tragic, the fear can be worse than the situation. And so what I loved about that C.S. Lewis quote that she shared was that we need to overcome this fear, and we need to be sensible. And right now we have plenty of capacity in almost all the hospitals in the United States to care for people who may have who may be having symptoms that are new and concerning, like chest pain, shortness of breath, all the ones that we're familiar with. So if we're having those, we need to seek help.
We do indeed. Don't go away. We're talking to Dr. Chris Jones, Chief of Staff, TriStar Centennial Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. This is Hope for the Caregiver, hopeforthecaregiver.com. We'll be right back.
Are you enjoying this podcast? I mean, I really hope so, because I'm John Butler, and I've helped produce Peter's show, Hope for the Caregiver, since it began. I'd like to think that I'm responsible for the explosive growth this show has enjoyed. I'd like to think that, but it doesn't necessarily make it so. But all that aside, Peter and I do have a really just fantastic time doing the show. We really love it. In this podcast, we not only publish things from the show, but also include some special bonus materials. We really don't want to have like a subscription section that would exclude people from something, but would rather make all of this available for free to hurting caregivers. You can help us out with that by clicking on the Become a Patron button. For as little as a dollar a month, you can be a part of the world's number one podcast for family caregivers and help out a lot of people who are really in need of it. There's all types of gifts that we'd like to give to you depending on what tier you'd like to join. Maybe it's $5, maybe it's $10, whatever you'd like. Consider sponsoring this podcast today and help strengthen family caregivers. Thanks so much, sincerely. And remember, healthy caregivers make better caregivers.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver here on Family Talk Channel, Sirius XM 131. This is Peter Rosenberger. We are so glad to have you with us. I'm talking with Dr. Chris Jones. He is the Chief of Staff at the TriStar Centennial Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee, a very large hospital. We've had the privilege and pleasure and also the excruciating time of having to stay there a couple of times with Gracie over the years, but they do a great job over there. And he is just bringing some calm assurance to what we're doing as a nation now, as we're starting to reopen things. People are seeking medical care. And one of the things I wanted you all to know today is, okay, what to expect? What are we doing? What's going on with elective surgery? What does that really even mean? Dr. Jones, I wanted to ask you about this thing, what I've dubbed as caregiver authority. And by that, I mean is we as caregivers don't know necessarily the science of what's going on with our loved ones, but we know them. And I have long been a proponent of caregivers learning how to better engage with their physicians. And so I wanted you to take a moment as we're doing these things, because a lot of people now are going to be kind of heading this way and they're going to be nervous. They're going to stuff. I want to help people learn how to prepare for a medical visit. And one of the things I talk about is the three P's of dealing with doctors. You prepare, you be polite, but you don't have to be subservient. I remember I had a doc one time that was giving me a little bit of attitude, and I told him, I said, "Doc, hey, with all due respect, I was taking care of Gracie when you were in junior high school. So let's keep this in perspective here." But the other thing is I want people to be prepared. It's a business meeting, and you need to be prepared for this. Go in there with some things written down. 3 to 5 issues that you want to address. And then the third thing is stay out of the pharmaceutical conversation. I learned that the hard way. I learned everything the hard way. But I want people to understand that they do have caregiver authority. Let's plan for these meetings. Let's make the most of these meetings. You guys are busy. Everything's going to kind of start hitting at once. What are your thoughts on that, with caregiver authority, being prepared for these meetings and so forth?
Well, I totally agree with everything you said. I think you're right on. You know, when I meet a patient or a patient and their caregiver, in my mind, when I'm with them, that person is the most important person that I'm going to be dealing with. And they're more important than me. And that is what good doctors do, is they recognize that the person that's in the room, frankly, is the boss. You know, my job as a doctor is to advise people, and sometimes I need to be firm with my advice, and they may choose not to take it, and that's okay. I'll love them anyway. But you know, ultimately, it's America. It's a free country, and I'm here to advise people, and I hope that I can give them choices from which they can choose and pick accordingly, so that it meets their goals and gets them moving in a healthy way. You know, the founder of HCA, and we're part of Centennial's part of HCA, was Tom Frist Sr., along with his son, Tom Frist Jr. But Tom Frist Sr. was famous. He famously said that the patients are not experts on their medical problem, but they're world class experts on whether or not you care. And that ultimately, as a you should expect that from your doctor. And so, you know, being prepared and being polite and not engaging in pharmaceuticals I very much appreciate that you said that. That's all great. But I have to say, when I've got somebody like you and your wife Gracie in the room, I know that you know her better than me, and I'd be a fool to think otherwise. I think that, you know, one of the things, if I'm a caregiver and I'm bringing somebody to the hospital, I'm going to be worried about several things. One is I'm going to be worried that my loved one may get sick in the hospital. I'm going to be worried that being in a public place could be dangerous. I'm going to worry that I might be separated from my loved one. I'm going to be worried that I might get sick myself. I guess what I'd like to do is just address a couple of those. You know, really, the hospitals are going to be the safest public place we're going to go. If most hospitals are like ours, they're preparing. And what they're doing is they're screening every visitor, patient, and personnel that comes into the hospital for any potential signs or symptoms of COVID. At our hospital, we're universal masking. So what that means is everybody that's in the hospital wears a mask. CEO, chief of staff, environmental services, food, nutrition, visitors, everybody.
Now, is that throughout the entire hospital, all day long?
Yeah, that's right.
Do you have there's no mask-free zones?
Well, we will say so. If a patient's in their room and they're either by themselves or with a family, they don't have to wear that while they're in there. But when somebody, like as an example, if I go in to see a patient You know, what we want them to do at that point is to put on a mask if they can. And so, you know, and they're always, you know, we set rules for everybody and then there are exceptions, right? I mean, so right now we have a no visitor policy, but if somebody has to have a caregiver there, we're a loving place and we're going to figure out a way to make that work. And we're moving actually to having one visitor per patient, and that's going to start this week. But taking those kind of precautions has allowed us to keep our hospital a really safe environment, a place where it's going to a place where transmission of the virus should be a very, very low probability event. One other thing I should say that our hospital and many hospitals are doing is we have all the COVID virus patients, what we call cohorted, meaning they're all in the same location. And it's separate from the other locations of the hospital. So somebody coming in to deliver a child is going to be a really far way away from the COVID patients. Somebody coming in for a heart procedure is going to be a good distance away, et cetera. And so trying to take these kind of steps has kept our hospital a really safe place. One last thing I should mention is that, just like you said earlier, if you watch cable news, you get the sense that, you know, the hospital, there are beds in the corridor and people are running up and down the hospital and disheveled. You know, there are some hospitals where that has happened, where they've been overrun. It's not true in more than 95% of the hospitals in the United States. If I took a picture or a video of our hospital right now, it would look calm and orderly in a safe place, just like it has for the past many years.
Well, Doc, we got to run, but I really do appreciate it. Can you give me in 10 seconds, what surprised you the most about this whole thing?
What surprised me the most is how people have come together towards a common mission and put the mission ahead of their fears. I guess I shouldn't say that I'm that surprised, but it made me feel really good to see.
Great news, great news. Dr. Chris Jones, TriStar Centennial Medical Center Chief of Staff. I'm going to put this out on the podcast. It'll be available at hopeforthecaregiver.com. Dr. Jones, thank you. Thank you very much for taking the time on this. We're going to have you back on, okay?
Thank you, Peter. I really enjoyed it.
All right. We'll see. This is Hope for the Caregiver. Don't go away. We got more to come. HopeForTheCaregiver.com.
Have you ever struggled to trust God when lousy things happen to you? I'm Gracie Rosenberger, and in 1983, I experienced a horrific car accident leading to 80 surgeries and both legs amputated. I questioned why God allowed something so brutal to happen to me, but over time, my questions changed, and I discovered courage to trust God. That understanding, along with an appreciation for quality prosthetic limbs, led me to establish Standing with Hope. For more than a dozen years, we've been working with the government of Ghana and West Africa, equipping and training local workers to build and maintain quality prosthetic limbs for their own people. On a regular basis, we purchase and ship equipment and supplies. And with the help of inmates in a Tennessee prison, we also recycle parts from donated limbs. All of this is to point others to Christ, the source of my hope and strength. Please visit standingwithhope.com to learn more and participate in lifting others up. That's standingwithhope.com. I'm Gracie, and I am Standing with Hope.